There is a medium in which human dreams can be implemented, and this is the mechanism by which UFO events are generated, needing no superior intelligence to trigger them. This would explain the fugitivity of UFO manifestations, the alleged contact with friendly occupants, and the fact that the objects appear to keep pace with human technology and to use current symbols. The theory explains the behavior of the visitors, aggressive in Latin America, Cartesian in France, alien monsters in the United States, etc. It also, naturally, explains the totality of religious miracles as well as ghosts and other so-called supernatural phenomena. 1. The same result would be obtained if we could hypothesize mental entities, which would be simultaneously perceptible to groups of independent witnesses. Unfortunately, it would stop short of explaining the traces left by such phenomena. 2. We could also imagine that for centuries some superior intelligence has been projecting into our environment, chosen for reasons best known to that intelligence, various artificial objects whose creation is a pure form of art. Perhaps it enjoys our puzzlement, or perhaps it is trying to teach us some new concept. Perhaps it is acting in a purely gratuitous effort, and its creations are as impossible for us to understand as is the Picasso sculpture in Chicago to the birds that perch on it. Like Picasso and his art, the great UFO master shapes our culture, but most of us remain unaware of it. Unfortunately, none of these attractive theories has a scientific leg to stand upon. I must apologize for presenting them here, but I only wanted to show how quickly one could be carried into pure fantasy as soon as the hard lesson of the facts was ignored. Clearly, 100 or 1,000 such theories could be enumerated at very little expense, and every one of them could serve as the basis for a very nice new myth, religion, or pseudo-scientific fad. If we decide to avoid extreme speculation, but to make certain basic observations from the existing data, 5 principal facts stand out rather clearly. Factelna has been among the public, in all countries, since the middle of 1946, an extremely active generation of colorful rumors. They center on a considerable number of observations of unknown machines close to the ground in rural areas, the physical traces left by these machines, and their various effects on humans and animals. Fact 2. When the underlying archetypes are extracted from these rumors, the saucer myth is seen to coincide to a remarkable degree with the fairy faith of Celtic countries, the observations of the scholars of past ages, and the widespread belief among all peoples concerning entities whose physical and psychological descriptions place them in the same category as the present-day ufonauts. Fact 3. The entities human witnesses report to have seen, heard, eye degrees and touched fall into various biological types. Among them are beings of giant stature, men indistinguishable from us, winged pound creatures, and various types of monsters. Most of the so-called JF pilots, however, are dwarfs and form 2 main groups. 1. Dark, hairy beings, identical to the gnomes of medieval theory, with the small, bright eyes and deep, rugged, old voices, and 2. Beings I who answer the description of the sylphs of the Middle Ages you or the elves of the fairy faith, with human complexions, over PJ pound sized heads, and silvery voices. All the beings have been described and without breathing apparatus. Beings of various kait have been reported together. Fact 4. The entities' reported behavior is as consistently absurd as the appearance of their craft is ludicrous. In numerous instances I have verbal communication with them, their assertions have been systematically misleading. This is true for all cases on record, opound from encounters with the gentry in the British Isles to conversations with their ship engineers during the 1897 Midwest flap and discussions with the alleged Martians in Europe, North and South America, and elsewhere. This absurd behavior has had the effect of keeping professional scientists away from the area where that activity was taking place. It has also served to give the saucer myth its religious and mystical overtones. Fact 5. The mechanism of the apparitions, in legendary, historical, and modern times, is standard and follows the model of religious miracles. Several cases, which bear the official stamp of the Catholic Church of Fatima, Guadeloupe, etc., are in fact, if one applies the definitions strictly, nothing more than UFO phenomena where the entity has delivered a message having to do with religious beliefs rather than with fertilizers or engineering. Given the above five facts, I believe the following three propositions to be true. Proposition 1. The behavior of non-human visitors to our planet, or the behavior of a superior race coexisting with us on this planet, would not necessarily appear purposeful to a human observer. Scientists who brush aside UFO reports because obviously intelligent visitors would not behave like that simply have not given serious thought to the problem of non-human intelligence. 162 Observation and deduction agree, in fact, that the organized action of a superior race must appear absurd to the inferior one. That this does not preclude contact and even cohabitation is an obvious fact of daily life on our planet, where humans, animals, and insects have interwoven activities in spite of their different levels of nervous system organization. Proposition 2. If we recognize that the structure and nature of time is as much of a puzzle to modern physicists as it was to Reverend Kirk, then it follows that any theory of the universe that does not take our ignorance in this respect into account is bound to remain an academic exercise. In particular, such a theory could never be invoked seriously in a discussion of the constraints placed on possible visitors to our planet. Proposition 3. The entire mystery we are discussing contains all the elements of a myth that could be utilized to serve political or sociological purposes, a fact illustrated by the curious link between the contents of the reports themselves and the progress of human technology, from aerial ships to dirigibles to ghost rockets to flying saucers, a link that has never received a satisfactory interpretation in a sociological framework. With respect to the last point, I find it remarkable that the first instance of a blackout caused by a UFO should be found in Twilight Bar, a play written by Arthur Coxler in 1933. During the play, which takes place on a small unnamed island where a civil war is about to break out, an enormous meteor flies over the town with a high-pitched whistling sound as all the lights go out. The craft plunges into the sea, and two beings, dressed in white coveralls and moving as if in a trance, come ashore and introduce themselves as messengers sent to warn mankind that it has 3 days in which to mend its ways. Otherwise, the creatures say, mankind will be destroyed and the earth will be repopulated by a superior race. Similarly, I am indebted to Donald Hanlan for pointing out that the first reference to UFO effects on car ignition came in a novel written in 1950 by Bernard Newman and entitled The Flying Saucer. It is true that when Newman's book was written, some UFO reports involving magnetic disturbances of the compass were circulating. Even in 1944, the military had already amassed considerable information about unidentified flying objects, the first large-scale scientific investigation having been done the previous year. But the fact remains that the coincidence between these works of imagination and the actual details of the reports that came from the public is a remarkable one, and it opens the way to unlimited speculation. Unfortunately, this is precisely the point where we must stop speculating. To conclude, let us remark that the density, time-wise, of UFO manifestations is not decreasing. Let us also note that knowledge of the structure of time would imply superior knowledge of destiny. I am using the word destiny to designate not the fate of individuals but the mechanism through which physical events unfold and the canvas upon which they are implemented. Perhaps I should remind the reader of 2 points we have touched upon earlier. 1. The relativity of time in Magonia, a theory passed on to us in numerous tales we have reviewed, and 2, that astonishing little remark made by a sylph to Fascius Cardan, which antedates quantum theory by 4 centuries. He added that God created the universe from moment to moment, so that should he desist for an instant the world would perish. As Jerome Cardan says, be this fact or fable, so it stands. I cannot offer the key to this mystery. I can only repeat, the search may be futile, the solution may lie forever beyond our grasp, the apparent logic of our most elementary deductions may evaporate. Perhaps what we search for is no more than a dream that, becoming part of our lives, never existed in reality. We cannot be sure that we study something real, because we do not know what reality is. We can only be sure that our study will help us understand more, far more, about ourselves. This is not a worthless task, and this idea gives me comfort. As I leave you with the lines of Milton, I took it for a fairy vision of some gay creatures of the element that in the colors of the rainbow live and play I the plighted clouds. I was awestruck, and as I passed, I worshipped, if those you seek it were a journey like the path to heaven to help you find them. Appendix: A Century of UFO Landings 1868-1968. To compile a catalogue is to invite criticism. Catalogues are obtained by integrating information over a variety of sources, but not every piece of information has an identifiable source. Information drawn from a single source is always questionable. Information gathered from several sources is generally contradictory. To compile a catalogue, then, is to weigh alternatives and to make difficult choices. In classical fields, in astronomy, for instance, the original sources are people scientifically trained in the same discipline as the man who conducts the compilation. Both follow common rules and observe a common ethic. They each provide many entries, so that personal bias can be estimated with some degree of accuracy. A general validity measure can be given for the catalogue as a whole. None of these guarantees exists in the present domain. The study of UFOs is more than a descriptive analysis of folklore, but it has not developed into a scientific field. It differs from folklore in two respects. The individuals at the source of the rumor are, for most of them, still alive, and physical effects are, in a significant number of cases, available to the analyst. What is lacking to bring the matter into the realm of science is a proper definition of the phenomenon to be studied, along with a set of criteria to determine the significance of any particular report. In the absence of a general presentation of outstanding cases, it is naturally impossible to ascribe meaning to an individual sighting, taken out of context. Criteria that are proposed under those conditions remain purely philosophical exercises, and definitions are similarly void of interest. For these reasons, it was felt that a catalogue of unsolved landings might be useful to those currently engaged in a serious study of the problem. The sample of observers, earlier studies have shown, is a true cross-section of the rural population. All ages and all nations are represented. These observers witnessed an event that, to them, was unique, and it was not always reported to authorities, but spread through the public or was given to the newspapers. Such accounts we shall find worded very loosely. Specialized magazines that record the data seldom bother to check them. Typically, they add errors of their own, giving the date of the newspaper as the date of the sighting or failing to recognize obviously duplicated versions of the same case. All those who have investigated claims of UFO sightings know well the frustration caused by journalistic inaccuracy. Fortunately, official sources can be consulted as a check on the reported events. Such sources often provide precise data not only on the phenomenon itself but also on the conditions of the observation. To compile a catalogue of UFO sightings, we must start with a number of books, magazines, and private files from which a general index is built. In doing so, we find that many writers do not quote their sources, so that we must either take their story at face value, reaction of the average reader, or reject it summarily, reaction of the average scientist. A third solution exists, but it is costly and extremely time-consuming. It involves cross-indexing every available source with all others, so that the path of the information through the reporting network can be traced back to the origin. Naturally, the attempt is not always successful. The publication of a catalogue such as this, however, may well stimulate new studies into cases we have failed to clarify either because we had to rely on a single source of data or because fresh field investigation would have been the only way to arrive at the truth. It is impossible to work alone when compiling such a catalogue, But the problem is complicated rather than simplified when people from different continents must cooperate to prepare a list of events that they see from different angles and know from different versions, which in turn reflect the biases of local authors, translation errors, etc. Lack of official recognition makes it very difficult to organize meetings or to exchange extensive files, in view of the costs involved in such operations. A compromise must therefore be found between completeness, accuracy, and practicality. The method we used in the preparation of the present catalog represents such a compromise. The construction of a cross-index of sources of UFO literature was begun by our group in 1961. We started with the French literature on the subject and extended it gradually to the Anglo-Saxon literature, then to that of the rest of the world. We were fortunate, coming into the field at that relatively late date, to benefit from the work of several predecessors who had already gathered in a systematic fashion extensive files covering one particular region or period. Foremost among these were the files of Aimé Michel and official data in Europe and in the United States. Correlation and overlap between the main sources have been studied in an effort to strengthen the validity of the whole, and it is from this index of sightings that the present catalogue of landings, which is but a small fraction of the general list, has been extracted. Draft versions were produced and circulated among a handful of people who have gained special knowledge of this subject either through personal interest or in an official capacity. They were thus able to contribute comments and additions to the list, which is finally presented here for the examination of a wider public. It is our hope that this preliminary work will encourage anyone who possesses relevant information and understands the need for the centralization of descriptions of such phenomena to come forward and join this continuing effort. Sources of information. It must be realized that a complete study of even the existing files, not to mention field investigation and active follow-up, would require full time, attention and a permanent staff. Speaking solely from the point of view of data gathering, a serious examination of the sighting reports that have accumulated in recent years cannot be conducted until a major institution seriously devotes some of its facilities to this task. It would be unreasonable to expect a powerful stream of rumors such as those surrounding the UFO phenomenon to be susceptible to analysis in a few months, while many universities must devote considerable time and effort in the understanding of classical folklore themes, such as Indian tribal rites and artifacts, which present no unsolved technological riddle and affect a much smaller and much more localized series of sources. This fact being granted, considerable clarification can be brought by the students of the phenomenon, provided they select an area small enough to be covered with some degree of reliability in spite of the inadequate facilities at their disposal. And, indeed, excellent work of this type is not lacking. Richard Hall with UFO Evidence, 1964, Hanlon, Clark, and Farish with their important articles about the 1897 wave, and Ted Blocher with his authoritative report on the UFO wave of 1947, to cite only a few, have published such works. But a general catalogue of landings from international sources has been sorely needed. To provide adequate historical perspective while preserving homogeneity of the material, we decided to focus our attention on the reports of the period 1868-1968. Before discussing our sources in detail, we should pay tribute to a researcher who compiled not only a list of landings but also a general catalogue of sightings of all categories, as early as 1961, Guy Quinsey, whose catalogues have unfortunately never been published. In France they circulated in manuscript form and have served as a base for our earliest index. Since 1961 we have found independent sources that provided cross-references for most items in these listings, but a few cases were never confirmed in this fashion, and our source in such cases will be indicated thus: Quinsey. Original references, unfortunately, were not given in his catalogues. At the end of 1963, when we compiled preliminary statistics on occupant report, we were able to gather only 80 such cases. It is a measure of the remarkable research done by many individuals in the last few years that in the present catalogue the number should have quadrupled, Since 35% of all landing accounts indexed here include descriptions of occupants, a third and very significant step toward an up-to-date reference was taken in 1966 when Charles Bowen, the present editor of the Flying Saucer Review, agreed to serve as the chairman of an international team of contributors and to devote a special issue of his publication to the humanoids. That special issue remains an outstanding document on the question of the occupants, along with Michel's Flying Saucers and the Straight Line Mystery. The Humanoids was of special interest not only because it listed over 300 landing reports but also because it contained for the first time extensive bibliographies and sources. This will allow us to give it as unique reference for many cases in the present list. The notation will therefore refer the reader to page 34 of the Flying Saucer Review special issue for a detailed discussion and bibliography. Within the scope of this catalogue, it was impossible to give adequate treatment of the many interpretations that had been offered for each sighting, and we felt our role was simply to provide in all cases the reference to the most complete and most readily accessible authority. Descriptions of landings can be found in specialized journals and in many books in addition to those quoted above. Charles Fort mentions a few such incidents in his works, and we quote from the Holt edition Vnlek, a descriptive study of the entities associated with the Type 1 sighting, Flying Saucer Review, X, 1, January-February, 1964, and June, 1964, by Tiffany Thayer. An American researcher, Orville Hartle, has published several accounts of early 20th century landings in his privately printed book, A Carbon Experiment. Similar cases have been noted during the 1947-1952 period. Captain Ruppelt, who was in charge of the U.S. Air Force's investigations in 1952, considered himself to be plagued by reports of landings, as he writes in his The Report on UFOs, and his team conscientiously eliminated them. But it is only when dedicated civilian researchers such as Leonard Stringfield, author of Inside Saucer Post, and Coral Lawrenson of APRO started independent investigations of the matter that proper light was cast on the American sightings. Another American researcher, George D. Fawcett, regularly publishes sighting summaries in Ray Palmer's magazine, Flying Saucers. Between 1963 and 1967, I have re-examined the totality of the general files of the Aerospace Technical Intelligence Center, ATIC, and have extracted from them reports that had fallen into oblivion. In some cases, I was able to initiate new investigations into some of the most remarkable incidents, published here for the first time with this reference, ATIC. The official procedure demanded that we delete the names of the witnesses from such reports. In one case we had to delete the name of the town itself. Although we recognize as futile an attempt at the exhaustive compilation of report, from all countries in the last 100 years, we did try to achieve the complete tabulation of French and Italian cases for that period, paying very special attention to the year 1954. The landings of 1954 have long appeared as the natural nucleus of any study of this problem, for several reasons. First, most of the sightings were made over rural areas of Western Europe, where a network of hamlets and small towns exists that has no counterpart in more recently developed regions of the world. A large number of detailed reports was thus generated when a major wave swept from Belgium and northern France to Sicily and northern Africa in the last 4 months of 1954. These reports were often made by independent witnesses in neighboring towns. The observers were well known locally, so that reliability could be easily ascertained. The stories were told with considerable naivete, because the reporters were country people who had never heard of flying saucers. Valuable details, first-hand documents, and personal interviews were promptly centralized by able researchers, such as Charles Garrett, a professional newspaperman with Labagone Republican, a daily newspaper sold in the east of France. In a pilot study of the 1954 observations done for the Flying Saucer Review special issue in 1966, we chose to limit our analysis to 200 sightings. About 40 more cases will be found here for that single year, And we feel this is by far the best documented section of the catalogue. Not only have all cases been re-examined for possible errors, but the dates, times, exact places, number and names of witnesses have been ascertained with a new degree of precision. I have benefited here from the assistance of several researchers in France and Italy, who must remain anonymous but to whom I here express my gratitude. The basic references for that period have been extracted from the files of Aimé Michel, who had himself worked from collections of newspapers and files of letters from readers of the Paris press, made available by the news media. We also used the collection gathered before 1958 by such pioneers as Raymond Vaileth, the publisher of Lumiere's Dans l'Inuit, Charles Garrett, and Roger Vervis. The early compilation of similar data by the team of Ironos under the direction of Mark Thyrin was also most useful. The book by Car Rouges, Les Apparitions de Martians, provided additional details, as did the two books by Harold T. Wilkins. For the post-1954 sightings, the scene is entirely different. The Flying Saucer Review was founded in 1955 and published articles by private researchers such as B. L.C. Power Trench and Gordon W. Creighton, who gathered and translated reports from the entire world, many of which were later included in the book World Roundup. Many South American sightings reached the APRA group through Olavo Fonts. Mrs. Coral Lorenzen has published these documents in her books The Great Flying Saucer Hoax, 1962, and Flying Saucer Occupants, 1966. While recent developments will be found in the third Lorenzen book, UFOs Over the Americas, 1968. In Australia, Andrew Thomas, an early pioneer of the field, gathered well-organized collections with the outstanding team of the Australian Flying Saucer Review. In South America, groups such as Codovny and Spedv, working respectively in Argentina and Brazil, publish regular information bulletins that cannot be neglected. Similar societies are active in Belgium, Chile, Denmark, Norway, Japan, New Zealand, and Germany. They have all contributed sightings to our list, either directly or indirectly. These sources provide continuity in the study for the entire period until the recent dramatic rise in the number of reports, that is, until the end of 1965. Up to that date, we believe the catalogue contains a clear majority of all reports in print, in national papers or in official files, and the near totality of the observations of occupants that have contributed to the emotional reaction of the public associated with the UFO phenomenon. After 1966, a similar statement would be meaningless. Conversation with policemen in practically any small town in the United States will disclose reports of unidentified objects, including, of course, landings, about the reality of which we shall never know the truth. In the present catalogue, a few cases selected from the files of the last 3 years have been given in order to encourage the continuation of this effort, but we have not published details of sightings still under investigation, and we have made no attempt at a systematic data-gathering effort. The reader should therefore be warned that the apparent leveling off of the number of entries has no relationship whatsoever to actual reality. Presentation of the observations. The following list has been prepared under several severe constraints, all pertinent information, to the extent that it can be defined in the present state of our ignorance, must be present, and yet one should be able to use it for quick reference. It must not become boring to the reader who simply wants to gain a general view of the diversity of reports. The journalist, the physicist, and the social scientist should find data relevant to their various studies in this common source. And it should also provide a useful link to the general literature of the field whenever possible. This meant certain rules had to be made and strictly followed for the presentation of the reports. 1. It was decided to regard as essential data, the date, local time, exact place of sighting, number and names of witnesses, the altitude and size of the object, and its distance from observers, appearance and behavior of object, the number and reported behavior of the creatures associated with it. 2. Other data were summarized to a varying degree. When the case had enjoyed nationwide or worldwide publicity and was presently available in books and journals, we felt it was enough to give adequate references and a summary. When we had been able to obtain new information, or to find a more solid interpretation of previously doubtful details, this was included. 3. As a majority of the observations come from outside the United States or Britain, all measures of distance have been expressed in the metric system.